Historically, many civilizations are named after the region where that civilization flourished, such as the ancient Egyptian, Mesopotamian, Mayan civilizations. In the modern world, we may speak about the Sinic or Chinese civilization, and this is common. Some civilizations were named after the religion of the majority of its populace. The most salient and conspicuous example is Islamic civilization. And this is because Islam represented everything in that civilization. One of the unique characteristics of Islamic civilization is its emphasis on the middle path, the middle way in everything. As an example, if we take the political ideologies of the 20th century, capitalism and communism, which were fiercely battling each other. Capitalism focused on the individual, on individual freedoms, on liberty and things of that nature. Communism, on the other hand, concentrated on the collective good and performed massacres and massive human rights violations in the name of the collective good.
Religion, or Islam as a religion, is the systematic way of living, meaning that it's going to organize the whole aspect of life of human being, being it education, economic, social life, cultural output. All that are to be guided by the Islamic world view. Hence, politics specifically, it is not out of Islam as a religion.
Now, if you look at the civilization in the Far East, the Islam have made a lot of changes. From people who are very self-centered, people who only talk about their own group of people, now they are very open, they become more global, they accept that everybody is like a big family. Before, people are very racist. Today, people are more open-minded, that we should share with each other, we should care for each other. Yeah, civilization of Islam have made a lot of people feel secure, feel peace, because that is what Islam want everybody to feel, that peace is for everybody, justice is for everybody. So civilization of Islam is not just talking about ritual, about prayer, about family, but you talk about the whole system of the society.
When we speak about the history of science in Islamic civilization, we are essentially telling the other narrative, a narrative that has seldom been told, one that is absent from most Western circles and even some Muslim ones. A story of breathtaking science that was produced by Islamic civilization. A story that will fill the gap that has been created by many history books, especially on the history of science. A gap not of a decade or two, but of more than a millennium of diligent work and scholarship. Actually, many scholars of civilization and sociologists have data on the numbers of geniuses in different regions and different civilizations. And it is interesting that it is in this period that most history books omitted that we find the preponderance of geniuses in Islamic civilization.
Non-Muslims, particularly Western countries, are suffering from suicide. Why? Because they are focusing maybe on the material existence. How about the other side of human being?
Islamic architecture is a very important aspect of Islamic civilization. This is so because Islamic architecture is a framework or a physical locus of Islamic civilization. It is its identity, it is its soul. Islamic architecture is the type of architecture whose multiple functions and to a lesser extent forms are inspired primarily by Islam, its message, its teachings, worldview, and belief system. It is a framework of Muslims' life activities, and we know that life in Islam is a form of worship, so we cannot separate between life and worship as far as Muslims are concerned. It is maybe because of this that Sinan, one of the greatest architects in the history of Islamic civilization, said that architecture is the most difficult profession, and he who wants to practice it correctly must be first of all pious.
It is most interesting that many of the scientific discoveries that are usually attributed to Western scientists today were actually developed or invented centuries earlier by Muslim scientists in the golden age of Islamic civilization. One of the examples may be that of the experimental method, which is usually attributed to Roger Bacon. But many don't know that someone who is also named the father of chemistry, Jabir ibn Hayyan, said, quote, that the first essential in chemistry is that you should perform practical work and conduct experiments. For he who performs not practical work nor conducts experiments will never attain the least degree of mastery. He also said that scientists do not rejoice in the abundance of material, but rather in the excellence of their experimental methods. If we come to the field of mathematics, you'll find a slew of Muslim scholars and scientists developing mathematical concepts. When we talk about the zero, or we talk about negative numbers, or decimals, or trigonometry, a lot of that was done by Muslim scientists. But unfortunately, a lot of this is omitted from much of the scientific literature today. When you talk about earth science and geology, usually we talk about James Hutton, but many don't know also that Al-Biruni made some amazing statements about geology and earth science 7 centuries before Hutton. If we take Newton, for example, and his laws of motion, many Muslim scholars actually started to develop some of those same laws, such as Al-Biruni. And as you can see, a lot of these scholars were polymaths, so they had contributions in all of these different fields, in astronomy, in mathematics, in geology, maybe in the optics, in medicine. When you talk about medicine, many of the books that were written by Muslim scholars were used in universities centuries after the deaths of those Muslim scholars.
A Western view of the Islamic civilization's contribution to science. Many people might not know that Islam plays a great role in developing sciences for humanity. It's true that Islam focuses on ascertaining the qualities of dignity and humanity, but it also focuses on the construction and development of the earth or the physical progress in general. We'll shed light on what some well-known scientists and thinkers said in that regard. In his book, History of Physics, Florian Cajori said, "The Arab and Muslim scientists were the first to launch and defend strongly the experimental method. This method is one of their prides. They were the first to recognize its usefulness and its importance to natural sciences." Florian Cajori also said about Muslim scientists, "One is astonished when he thinks of the work of Arabs and Muslims in algebra. Al-Khwarizmi's book on algebra was a reference for Muslim and European scientists alike. They relied on it in their research and adopted a lot of theories from it. Therefore, it can be said that Al-Khwarizmi founded algebra on the right basis." Will Durant wrote in The Story of Civilization 4, The Age of Faith, "Chemistry, as a science, was almost created by the Muslim. For in this field where the Greeks, so far as we know, were confined to industrial experience and vague hypotheses, the Saracens introduced precise observation, controlled experiment, and careful records." Quoting the British Encyclopedia about Arabs' contribution to the science of pharmacology, "Many names of drugs, many compounds known now, and the general structure of modern pharmacology, with the exception of modern chemical modifications, of course, were initiated by Arabs. Goethe said, "Arabs taught us how to make books, gunpowder, and compass." We have to think how our Renaissance would have been if it was not for the remnants that we received from the Arab civilization.
The Islamic civilization is not just talking about the physical development, also the spiritual development, and also the mental development. Always remember, Islamic civilization is nothing to do with just physical development, but it's a balanced development. Body, mind, and soul, to make us a better person.
The state built by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was not an oppressive kingdom. It was a state of justice, mercy, and consultation. The caliphs of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, followed his footsteps in running the Islamic State. For example, Omar ibn al-Khattab, the second caliph, established Bayt al-Mal, the treasury, and allocated a sum of money for all citizens of all ages. He did not set exclusively for himself any luxurious belongings as kings do. He never had full stomach till he was sure his citizens are full, and none of them were deprived or hungry. He founded a number of new organizations because Muslims needed them when their state became bigger. He was very strict in observing the civil servants and auditing their financial disclosures so that not to embezzle the public funds. Omar ibn al-Khattab maintained the judiciary system which existed in the Islamic State before his reign.
As Islamic civilization stressed the middle path, the focus, in addition to the divine, was on the human being. The human being as the creation of Allah, the creation that He honored and that He required to construct and build life here on earth. The human being that would create a human civilization, a civilization that focused on the human being as the subject of development. A civilization by humans and for humans that realized and respected humanity, that focused on important social concepts like justice and social equality and freedom, things that Allah Almighty commanded in the Quran and through the teachings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. On the other hand, he forbade vices like injustice, like violation of people's rights. With such a focus, it's no wonder that Islamic civilization flourished and did so for centuries, and that even people of other faiths had their place in that civilization and were able to make immense contributions in Islamic civilization, because it was a civilization of faith and a civilization for humanity.
أفلا ينظرون إلى الإبل كيف خلقت وإلى السماء كيف رفعت وإلى الجبال كيف نصبت وإلى الأرض كيف سطحت فذكر إنما أنت مذكر